This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle. To my left is Greg Lenz, and to his left is...
a couple of pillows and a towel.
That's it. There's nobody else here.
No.
What the hell?
Apparently, it's just We Are Libertarians, but that's just two.
Right.
There aren't any more than that.
Everybody else has given up, just like I've given up.
You just quit.
But I have to, because you show up every Thursday night and want to record a podcast episode, and I feel sorry for you.
That's true. You are my only, like, outside or connection with liberty.
You're like, I wanted to get out of the house. Can we talk about liberty and stuff?
Yeah, it'll be really fun, I promise. Chicks dig it.
Yeah, that's not true. As a man who is new on the dating scene, I'm single, I'm ready to mingle, and... not a lot of mingling happening.
I don't know. The female friends and people that have liked our Facebook page seem to love the Spangle memes.
That's because women love to make fun of me. That's a tradition that goes back to kindergarten. When Julie Mason just kept making fun of me.
Did she now?
Uh-huh.
Dr. Mason.
That really is just an inside joke for Greg and I since we went to grade school together.
Yes. Oh, man.
No. Julie Mason, my very first crush.
How many times do you think her name's going to be searched on Facebook now that you've said that?
Oh, I should delete that. Who cares?
tens of searches.
Tens of creepy libertarians searching her, messaging her. Yeah, I have to hand it to you. Your Spangle memes have been excellent lately. I should have not done two things in the course of the last 3 years. Number one, posted a lot of pictures of myself, but listen, when you are as egomaniacal and as good-looking as I am...
Why wouldn't you? Yeah.
People want to see my face.
Give the public what they want.
And secondly, I never should have taught Greg Photoshop.
And it actually started because I asked you to do a meme because I wasn't sure what they were. And this was right back on the period when you would call them memes and I didn't know any different. And then I was like, you know what? I am marginally smart individual, I can figure out Photoshop. And I just played with it and played with it. And I was like, oh, this will be great. Once I can start putting Spangle's face on things from 4chan, this show's really going to take off.
And you used the one meme that shall never be shared except on your personal Twitter feed, @GTLens. @GTLens. You can figure it out for yourself, because when you see the photo, you will go, oh my God. It's horrifying.
It is. And I actually, dialed down the meme from its original creation just because I even asked, I go, am I allowed to put this out there? And you were like, very much no.
Well, there was the famous Santoro, the only time that you've ever, in the history of We Are Libertarians, I've had to yell at everybody, including myself. And I've been yelled at. But Greg has only been yelled at one time.
And you didn't even yell. You just took it down. I go, where did that go? Because it had like 6 likes in under 30 seconds.
It was the only lapse in judgment that you've ever had. It was a picture of Rick Santorum with a very unfortunate saying on it. A very, very unfortunate saying on it.
If you are one of the original 6, know that I love you. And please message me. I have special gifts for you.
We Are Libertarians tote bag is available for your pledge. So, very, very good. The last one where you made me Ron Swanson is frighteningly accurate.
It is unreal. I did that, and I was like, I don't even have to change anything. Yeah. I just merely had to copy and paste, and then I copied his mustache and put it on you.
Well, the part that was accurate was what you wrote.
Oh.
Which is, I don't like to get chummy with listeners.
No, you don't like listeners very much.
No, especially John Crumbs. I don't like that kid from Idaho.
Oh, he is at Jerry Falwell U.
Right. He's learning how to be a Baptist lawyer.
Apparently, they start all legal code with the Ten Commandments and then go from there.
Look out, Ralph Reed.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, I want to thank a few of our listeners. A few. Give a little back with appreciation and thanks here. About once every couple months, I open up my mailbox and I see a glorious check for $30.
Very nice.
This is the third or fourth time this has happened. And, you know, we put at the beginning of every episode a little commercial that you all skip through by now for audible.com. And that's where that money, that offering from our listeners to the dear leader, if you will.
Sacrifice, really.
That sacrifice that you all have made comes from buying audible.com. So if you go to the We Are Libertarians website, you can scroll down on the right and you can find the link there. I think it's audible.com/WAL, maybe.
Yep,
I don't even remember
it.
What the link is. Audible.com is an audiobook service, and they've got a bunch of libertarian titles like Ron Paul,
Walter Block,
Mises,
Rothbard.
Yeah, a lot of great history. Just there's a ton of stuff on there that you'd like. I love listening to audiobooks. I'm an Audible learner. Like when I do my show prep for the show and I read, I forget it all, or I just don't do it.
That's obscene because to my behind me and to the left is one of the largest book collections I've ever seen. So are you saying all that money was just thrown down the tube?
No, I'm talking about like reading current events.
Oh,
like I can read a newspaper if it's printed out, but if I scan headlines and I scan kind of the basics, reading is just difficult.
You're a clickhole.
Yeah, I like the clickhole. That is my favorite website. The more than weirdlibertarians.com. The clickhole is the greatest website of all time. Trust me, as a web director of an entertainment brand, nothing is better than clickhole because.
They are fantastic at headline writing.
Yeah.
Content production, not so great.
No, well, the point is they're making fun of BuzzFeed and all these other clickbait sites.
Yeah.
We digress.
They are BuzzFeed trolls.
So, anyways, what I really like to do is listen to podcasts before we prep. I listen to a lot of different podcasts. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. And if I hear it, then I learn it better. So I'm an Audible learner. And if you're listening to a podcast, that might be you as well. And you'll find that reading a book is just, you just don't have time to sit down at the end of the day and commit an hour to reading. You know, whereas if you put on the audiobook while you're cleaning, cooking, driving, you get 15 chapters done in a week.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So it's just much more convenient. I learn a lot more. The performances are great. I love Audible.com. And, you know, when you guys sign up for Audible and you stay on for you get one free month. You get one free audiobook if you sign up for Audible.com. And then if listen, I'm trying to do a commercial bit.
This is pretty amazing to watch. I wish the listeners could see this.
I am currently talking. I'm trying to talk about Audible.com, and my cat is rubbing on my earphones, on the microphone, on my lap. Now she's
heading
over.
Don't come over here.
Oh, now she's on Greg's lap, rubbing on him.
Get away from me.
Ultimate sign of a cat affection. She just put her asshole in your face.
Oh, get away from me.
So check it out, audible.com. You get a free month, and then after you've 1 month of paid subscription, then Daddy gets a cut.
Oh. Okay? Was that used on the recent wall web redesign?
It was. So we've redesigned the website, and go check that out at weirdlibertarians.com. It looks very fancy. And we've also started to step it up with our subreddit, too. So if you are a Reddit user, go to reddit.com/r/WeAreLibertarians and check out some of the links that I've been posting there and just stuff as I kind of peruse and I find the headlines and some of the stories that I find interesting, whether I agree with them or not. Just, you know, because we pass links all day long in our chat.
Oh, all day, yeah.
And I'm just like, why? We should put these somewhere.
Yeah.
And so if you're a listener and you think, you know, gosh, and who doesn't think about Greg Lenz and Chris Spangle throughout their day, I'm sure.
I wonder what they're doing right now.
If you think, gee, I'd like to share that with those funny, smart, intelligent, and I presume good-looking guys on We Are Libertarians, then go to the subreddit and post a link there, or heck, message it to us, tweet us, you know, whatever.
whatever your preferred, except Google Plus. We will not take anything from Google
Plus. If you're on Google Plus, you can go post it on Google Plus, but I will see it in 4 to 6 months.
So. And by the way, how was your birthday week?
My birthday week was great. Thanks,
I mean, you are amazing as a monarch of the libertarian movement. The incredible amount of birthday greetings you got was nothing short of astonishing.
Except for my grandma's. Cuts deep, man. But no, anyways, the joke. So you are responsible for part of this. A few very dear friends, dear friends, decided to throw me a surprise birthday party on Friday night.
That I didn't find out about till Friday night, and I got a Facebook message saying, hey, you knew about it, right? Like, no.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder who that was from. We'll compare notes afterwards.
It was the little female Cheney that comes on the show from time to time.
Yeah. It was a surprise up until Maya told me about it 3 weeks before it happened.
Not a soul told me.
No.
Is there like some special libertarian chat that I don't know about and I don't make the purity cut?
No. I'll explain later. I'll explain what happened to you later. No, so Maya, after the Creating Maya podcast that we did, she goes, listen, I hate this. I hate this surprise party bullcrap. She didn't say bullcrap, but there's, you know, children listening, I'm sure. On this date and at this place, there's going to be a party for you at this time. And that's why I wanted this, and that's why they're asking for this information. I'm like, thanks. It's very sweet of someone to want to throw me a surprise party. If you knew how awful most of my birthdays have been, like one of the highlights of my birthdays in 1997, I got to go to my grandpa's wake. I mean, that's a highlight of my birthdays.
Wow.
So this is very sweet. I mean, it's, you know, I have a lot of internet friends, you know, and not necessarily a lot of close friends. So it's very sweet of someone to do this for me for the first time. And then
how
Maya
was attendance?
About 15 people.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, no.
Well, the picture you took, there was no one in it, and I felt horrible, but I was like, I would have been there, but I had no idea.
There were a lot of people who messaged me who were very upset at me that I didn't invite them to my birthday party.
Your surprise party.
My surprise party that I didn't know about.
Well, you did now.
I did, but
so
I
now
can't
you really
say
gotta
anything
feel bad.
Because I didn't want to let on, you know, and the person who put it together doesn't listen to this, like most people don't. And so... Oh, that little podcast, that's cute. You're familiar with this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to ruin the surprise for them because, you know, it's exciting to throw a surprise party. It's almost as much of a surprise for them as it is for you.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, about 15 people showed up and I took a picture where one side of the room was totally empty and I said, I had a surprise. Someone threw me a surprise party and here's the attendance, and it was like nobody. And it got a lot of comments and likes and a lot of concerned people saying, like...
I felt terrible. And I saw that before I got the message from the individual that threw it. And I was like, you are... This surprise party is not literal. Like, you're supposed to invite people beforehand whose birthday it isn't. The homeschooled are very odd. They're very odd. They have very, very weird thing way about going things.
And the funny thing is Maya didn't even show up to the party.
Well, you know, it was a protest.
So, no, I totally get why she didn't. I mean, it's sort of a social anxiety thing. And
Well, you were lavished with praise for an entire week.
Well, she thought that like there was going to be a ton of people there because she thinks that everybody likes me. But that's just because no one likes her. So when anybody ever has anything nice said about them, she goes, wow, a lot of people like them. And so...
I'm surprised we're not closer because that doesn't happen to me.
Yeah, so she thought, oh gosh, it's a surprise party for Spangle. Everybody likes that guy, so I'm not gonna go because there's gonna be a lot of people there staring at me. And it turned out to be like all of her best friends; those are the only ones that showed up because the people who threw it didn't have access to a lot of my, you know, a lot of different my different friend circles. So really, it was a lot of like libertarians from the Rupert campaign, which is great. I loved it. It was flattering that anybody showed up because trust me, I was nervous. It's like, what if I walk in there and nobody is there? And the person who threw the party was like, that was a serious concern of mine until about 2 days ago. I was like, don't tell me that.
Well, if she didn't message people 30 minutes beforehand, it might have been a little different.
This was the different person. This is a sweet person. The one you were dealing with is
not sweet at all.
Is dead to me.
Yeah.
is very dead to me.
Yes.
So that was Friday. My birthday was the following Tuesday. And so Greg made a point of telling everybody that it was my birthday on Facebook like every day.
Sunday night at like 1 a.m.
Sunday night, Monday. Like, people are messaging me 2 days before my birthday saying happy birthday whenever it was.
I wanted this. It was kind of like just a sociological, or I guess a psychological experiment. How uncomfortable and how bad can I make people feel that they don't even know? Because, you know, Facebook has that where your birthday may not be public.
Right.
Or may not be on there. And so I was like, I'm just going to sit back and push one domino and see what happens. And it was hilarious
it
to
was.
Watch.
It was the best birthday present anybody gave me. Because, because I'm sitting there like 2 or 3 days before getting these horrified messages. I'm so sorry I missed your birthday. Happy belated birthday. You know, I don't want you to take offense to this. Like, my birthday's in 3 days. I'm so sorry I didn't know what it
was.
Oh, yeah,
right? I know. That's what I didn't get to see that. And that's what I really wanted to see was if I could get them twice.
It was the greatest troll. You gave me the ability to troll friends and family. And that is just all I really wanted.
I know. Trolling is the best gift you can give anyone. I'm sure there was lots of sympathy and empathy and all these people telling you what a bad person they were, and you were just kind of nodding your head in agreement while reading it.
And then I'm just like giggling, and I'm like, it's in 2 days. I'm so sorry I didn't know.
Well, they missed last year's.
Yeah. So, it was very nice. It was made me feel special.
You are beloved, even listen, as a monarch.
It's very important to make me feel special, okay? I have a very fragile ego.
You only have 5,000 Facebook friends to cry to.
Even my cat hates me, though. I mean, she, look at her. She's trying to swat it. Hey, I'm talking about you. You want to talk? Say hi. Now that failed.
Yeah. Which one is that?
That's Mittens. You're fired from the podcast, Mittens.
Well, should we talk about the world that's going to hell in a handbasket?
Well, you can talk about it, and I'll just go, that's a good point, Greg. So what do you want to start with?
Well, I mean, what do you know the most about? Outside of the Quebec separatist movement.
You son of a bitch. That, by the way, has reached critical mass to the point of annoying me. So I don't know if that was the goal, but it's annoying
me
now.
That was absolutely the goal.
Like, you make a few jokes about how Canada's the devil, and now I can't go anywhere or do anything without being referred to as Canadian.
As the Canadian.
The Canadian. I'm the leading Canadian. Like, everybody has their, like, they separate people and their Facebook and social media friends into the box. Like, that's the libertarian guy. That's my college roommate friend. That's
high school friends, family.
I follow this guy for the news. Like, all of a sudden, I'm now the Canadian guy for people, and I am not happy about
this. You're like
this.
The polar vortex watchman is right. What you are. Everyone just waits to see what kind of awful Canadian thing you're going to do,
like,
next.
People are posting Canadian stories and like, was this you? It's like, I know I'm not committing crime in Vancouver yesterday.
God bless Troy Hill.
God, and Troy's the number one offender.
Troy is fantastic. He is now at the point where he feels comfortable enough. We only met once, but he feels comfortable enough to just send me pictures and ask me to Photoshop things for him.
That's son
so
of a...
our relationship has gone to a very intimate level.
Two grown men swapping photos of another grown man.
Another grown man saying, how can we giggle about this?
Yes, this is... I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
I know, right?
And take Mittens with you.
I know. But...
I don't care. Let's, you know...
You want to talk about President Obama's, you know, grand design for saving the world? Or would you rather talk about those drunks that want to separate from the people with bad teeth?
You know, I want to talk about Scotland, because this is something that I know almost nothing about and almost doesn't seem like it's a real thing. It's almost like I'm watching a Canadian bacon type version, or it's one of those things where, yeah, they're getting to separate, but they're not really getting to separate. Wink, wink. You know, we're going to make them a territory, but they're legitimately trying to gain their independence from England for the first time in England for the first time in
307 years.
Yeah, so it seems to be a pretty big deal, and it's a very big deal for England. I mean, Scotland has most of the oil reserves. So tell us, and I think the vote's what, tomorrow?
The vote's going on right now.
The vote's happening
right
now.
Thursday. Sorry, I keep thinking today's Thursday. It's actually Wednesday.
It's Wednesday, so we're recording this on September 17th of 2014. For those who are listening long in the
Constitution
future,
Day.
Constitution Day. Happy Constitution Day, everybody.
Notice how the president didn't talk about that today, because that would require asking Congress to authorize air strikes on a terrorist organization.
Well, that's a little constitutional, right?
Well, he's got like 30 days, but that's to commit troops, not necessarily do strikes.
Right. We'll talk about that later, but let's get to the scotch. I want to hear about this. What's happening?
So the Scottish people, and it starts in 2012. So you have a newly elected conservative prime minister, David Cameron, agrees to the Edinburgh Agreement with the head of a quasi-functioning, quasi-self-sovereign organization in Scotch. It's going to turn into a Ron White podcast quick. Scotland Nationalist Party leader. And so they meet. They have this signing of what's called a concordant. And what it was to allow a referendum on Scottish independence. Now, at the time, David Cameron was newly elected. He was very, in language, very Margaret Thatcher-esque. He was a English conservative, which is kind of like a blue dog Democrat in the United States. And they had this formal signing of the Edinburgh Agreement saying that Scotland would, by XYZ time, 2014, have the ability to vote for independence. Well, it was less than a 5% chance of happening. And so the actual text of this agreement is very, very, very vague. There's nothing binding. There's no pre-commitment to plans on how things would be carried out. There's no talk of currency, of sovereignty, of who would get what. And because that happened and no one took it seriously, we're at the point right now where a YouGov poll as of 2 days ago said there was it was 2% in favor of the pro-separatist movement. And now, as of today, though, that was 2 days ago. As of today, it's looking like 50-50 or 51-49 in staying together, because this kind of crept up on people. As of a month ago, this thing was not even close.
It's almost like to compare it to something here in the United States. And I guess this is why I hadn't really taken it seriously. And then like a week or two ago, I was like, oh, this might actually be serious. The Constitutional Convention is one of those things that everybody always talks about. It always gets introduced into the General Assemblies.
The Tea Party crowd eats it up.
Right. But, the progressive left eats it up, because then they can open Pandora's box. We're totally against a constitutional. Well, I'm totally against a con. But it's never something that's it's like the pasty white guy version of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait. Comic-Con is the pasty white version of Comic-Con. But
there's some Asians there.
It's never, that's racist. There's never like an actual movement. It's never going to happen, but that's almost like what this was like. And then all of a sudden, wait a minute.
What all of a sudden happened is they opened up the Democratic playbook. So the way this worked out was Cameron's this newly elected conservative, and he starts subscribing to austerity.
Right.
Traditionally, Britain would have just had the European or their central bank, print money, pay off through the inflation and devaluation of the currency, pay down their debt. But David Cameron, as the staunch conservative, decided we're going to make cuts to the welfare state.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, that gave the Scottish National Party their opening. And so they started making it, because it's funny, England and the rest of the United Kingdom outside of Scotland is conservative,
mm-hmm.
which not really, but that's what they call themselves. Now, Scotland is where the labor unions come from, the minimum wage, the socialism, the welfare state, all of that originates in Scotland, but they are only, roughly they're a third of their GDP, or not a third, but like 15% of their GDP, but they're only like 8% of their population.
Right.
But they have been so popular because of their progressive policies and the class wars that are inevitable in England, that they were able to get traction with this. And so they started talking about how all of a sudden David Cameron was going to cut back pensions, guaranteed pensions, labor protections, all these things. And this spread like wildfire. Combined, I'm sure Braveheart was shown on like a TBS or BBC over and over and over. But in reality, that's the only way he was able to do this. Then he had a series of debates, and he did incredibly well. their leader, I think it's Alistair, his last name's escaping, like Sinclair, I think, he put out a white paper of the policies, and it was essentially a positive bill of rights. It was saying you'll get a minimum pension, we will not inflate away the currency, you'll get all these things. Mm. It was the opposite of like a James Madison or Thomas right. Jefferson bill of rights, but it was really popular. It spread, and as David Cameron didn't even acknowledge it, he just ignored it, it grew.
Right.
And so now we're at the point where tomorrow night, there's a real likelihood that Scotland could set off the equivalent of an Arab Spring, but for small, independent, regional states.
Hmm.
Because that's the real concern for everyone. Spain will not allow, if Scotland wins, Spain is not going to vote to allow them in the Euro at all.
Really?
Because they don't want Catalonia, where Barcelona sure. is, to break off.
Sure.
On top of that, Quebec.
Yeah.
You're going to get all, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's another concern.
Say no more.
Exactly.
Of course it's a concern. It's in Canada.
Well, you know why? You know who the first country to recognize the Ukraine after they broke off from the USSR was?
Who?
Canadians.
Son of a...
Right?
Listen, they're so anti-Putin. We here on the podcast are very pro-Putin.
We're pro-Putin.
We're pro-Putin.
Yes.
No.
Uncle Vladimir is a very close friend.
For those of you who can't read sarcasm, that was a joke.
Yeah.
I feel we need to make a sarcasm tag here for some of you people, based on some
people.
Of the emails. You people, the kids who don't understand sarcasm.
Yeah, the literal group.
Right, the literal.
Yes.
The literal libertarians.
Yes.
The literalitarians.
Usually homeschooled.
Right, right, right.
But however, so this sets off a huge number of implications, right? So imagine this. Imagine tomorrow. Oh, you want to take a break from it?
No. Okay. No. Keep going.
Imagine tomorrow that Indiana broke off from the United States. Now, we've had this in this country once, right? Civil War.
Right.
So states seceded. And
what was that? I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it was.
I went to public school.
It was when all of a sudden the states' rights movement got commandeered into, oh, you're a bunch of racist slave owners. And
Is that the War of Northern Aggression? I learned about that in Atlanta.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly.
With that bastard Sherman.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it was hot as hell down there and there are no more trees.
Speaking of which, screw you, Brett Bittner.
Yeah.
I can't come to the podcast tonight. I'm too tired. I've been at busy. It's been a busy week. I've been up since 5 a.m. and it's 9:11 right now.
Did Brett Bittner, you invited him?
I did, and he didn't. He no-showed.
You never give me any idea who's going to be here when I walk
because
in.
Because he no-called, no-showed. And I like to keep you fresh and on your toes.
Lazy Southerner.
So I blame Sherman for this.
Anyway.
He's destroying our podcast as we speak.
But like, if you think about it, it is pretty historic because in the United yeah. States, the last time anyone tried to secede... And not like from an individual state like a Northern Colorado or, you know, all these like various movements that don't, they all started out like the Scotland Independence Movement, but they don't go anywhere. They never do it from the federal government, from the Union. And we killed what? How many people died in the American Civil War? 600 and...
Well, there was, what, 50,000 soldiers, but mm-hmm. it was like, I don't know.
I thought for some reason I had like in my head, it was either 300 or 600,000 is one or the other.
Right.
Individuals, and in Scotland right now, it's a bunch of people talking about whose fish and chips were the original, were OG, you know, but it sets off the implications. So, like, if Indiana seceded from the United States, what currency would you go try to buy things with tomorrow?
That's a good question.
What about your savings account? Would that be denominated in Indiana shekels
right.
or American U.S. dollars?
So, is it one of these things that everybody kind of thinks that they want it, but then when you start really putting the details down on paper, everybody goes, wait a minute.
Well, that's what the opposition, so like David Cameron and the rest, and President Obama came out in support of keeping everyone together. They're trying to act like all of a sudden there'll be an overnight devastation to the U.S. or the world global economy.
Right.
Right? Well, that doesn't happen because the way the agreement was set up is they have, before they become fully independent, there's a segue, a transition period.
Sort of like Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Transitioning to China.
And so it's not till March 24th, 2016. And mm-hmm. that's not even like a hard date. That's a tentative agreement. Like they're shooting for that. And so the real questions are, right now, Scotland is responsible for, because they're a part of the United Kingdom, they're responsible for part of the UK's debt.
Right.
What part of the national debt are they going to take on? The other thing is that the oil revenue that England makes, the United Kingdom makes, is in the North Sea, which right. will be Scotland's. And they think they're just entitled to it and they're going to take it. Watch how non-violent that'll be.
Yeah. England is going to free the shit out of Scotland again.
Oh, yeah. They're going to liberate them right. from their oil addiction.
Hey, you with your cute little ballots, guess what? That's our oil.
Exactly. And so there are just so many questions. And then in the debates, the question was, what currency are you going to use? And the guy that's leading this movement just assumed they'd be able to use the British pound. Oh, no. The United Kingdom is threatening them that any institution that trades with Scotland in the British pound will be subject to a predatory tax, or in the United States, what would be a predatory tax. And so there'd be no incentive for anyone to trade in that. And then on top of that, they don't have a central bank. They don't have any assets to create a central bank like gold or any precious metals.
Right.
It's just one of those things that all of a sudden this got away from them and everybody was sitting there like, oh, God, what are we going to do now?
Right.
And then pensions, like if you're a have a pension from the, or you're a retiree in Scotland, from your pension comes from the United Kingdom.
That's separated. Yeah. That
it doesn't have a currency they can issue.
Right.
All of a sudden that becomes a real thing where I can't buy food and not a, oh my God, William Wallace, we're free.
Because as a libertarian, I sit there and I go, wow, independence, great. But then you're telling me it's a bunch of socialists. They're just going to destroy the whole country within like 3 years.
Oh, yeah. It'll be, you know, they are a, and they want to set up, so they want their oil because they were born there and that's their natural right or whatever.
Right.
But they have no way of defending it. And they're going to take their oil revenues, and the goal is to put that into a sovereign wealth fund like a Norway or something like that, which isn't a bad idea. It's just, how are you going to stop the, probably the, 6th to 8th largest military power in the world that's on the same island as you, that you just said, screw you guys, from going and taking your oil. ISIS took oil fields from the Iraqi government, which is U.S. backed.
Right.
Watch what happens when a bunch of drunk Scotsmen try to take over an oil field and hopefully not light themselves on fire.
Well, this is great. You know, we talk about ISIS and Ukraine and, you know, we talk about all this, but you think, the Western world, we're done with all that World War I, World War II crap. Then you hear stories like this and you're like, great. Here comes the IRA.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is it's more peaceful than that. I think it'll be drastically more peaceful because they have some government institutions and it's a gradual transition away. I just think it's going to get ugly when it comes down to, all right, here's how much debt you have to take on.
Right.
Because they contribute roughly 9% annually to the deficit, but they account for 30% of GDP.
Hmm.
So are you just going to take it equitably, or are you going to be say, well, this is only our part?
Right.
And so they responded to the threats of not being able to use the pound with, well, we're not taking any debt.
Right.
But that's not possible because then no one else in the global financial world would allow you to issue debt and be willing to buy it for anything other than like 30% interest.
So let's talk about the finality of it, because most likely most people will be hearing this after this is already decided. What happens if it fails, in your opinion?
If it fails, it goes away forever. And I mean, until there, I'd say it's another
generation.
60 to 80, yeah. It's another generation before this comes up again. And by then, I think more and more nationalism's on the decline.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I think the nation state, as we know it, is definitely being diminished because of the internet, largely, but also economics, and I think people are just kind of becoming, the attitudes are just shifting. I mean, the idea that we're going to go to fight for Assad, for what reason? They don't have a country, they don't, you know, I don't know, it's just, you say you're doomed, if you don't learn from history's mistakes, you're doomed to repeat it, and I think that there's been a lot of progression in the education department as far as nation states goes. Maybe I'm just foolish.
I think you're right.
But I view it as, especially with our generation, and maybe it's, again, grain of salt, maybe it's just because I'm a libertarian who's kind of evolved in thinking. When I think about the immigration issue, I just say, I really don't care. You know, when it comes to war, I'm not fighting for my country and the values that we have as Americans. I'd be fighting for the government. And I don't agree with the government. Like, the idea that America and what America stands for and the values that we have and the common history, the idea that that is best held by our government is just not something that I agree with. And if you wanted me to pledge allegiance to the flag, i.e. the United States government, F you, because Snowden and the wars and torture and so many of the civil liberties erosions, they don't believe in that crap. Why should I believe in that crap and salute them? So as an American in the most one of the most jingoistic countries on the planet, I get to use that word because my last name is Spangle. in a country that is the last remaining superpower, if I feel that way, I can't imagine how somebody who has no, you know, Americans are mutts. We have no, you know, there are definitely defined ethnic communities, but you and I certainly don't hold on to an ethnic heritage.
Not at all. Know?
I mean, you're Native American. I'm mostly German and Native American and Dutch and Irish. And, you know, there's, I had spätzle for dinner, but that's about as close as I get to.
Did you really?
I did. I made some spätzle and sausage.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Would you? I'm a Bavarian man myself. That's my roots.
Pro. Well, no, that's not even national. Well, it used to be. Not anymore.
Spätzle, for those of you who don't know, is like a German egg noodle, and it just tastes like every other egg noodle. It's just shaped different, but it's delicious with a little brown gravy. And that's about as close as I get to my culture. Spangle is from the cupbearer of Würzburg, you know, in Bavaria, and that's all I know about my heritage. But then you go to a place like the Middle East where you're still attached to the historical clans or
it's tribal.
The lineage, the tribes that you came from, you know. The notion that Iraq exists in the form that is Iraq in this day and age is so foolish to me. Why are we trying to force the Sunnis, the Shiites, and the Kurds to all coexist in the state of Iraq when that was some imaginary line that we in the West drew for them after World War II, you know, and in some cases after World War I, depending on your country. And those borders are constantly changing. If the people of southern Ukraine are Russian, they speak Russian, and they want to be part of Russia, who gives a crap? You know what I mean? Like, it's the idea that the Ukrainian government and the rest of the world would fight Putin over territory that those people want to be Russia. They want it to be Russia. You know, I just look at it, I go, this is silly. Why are we fighting over this?
So you would support the separatist movement? Regardless of ideology or no? Are there conditions to it?
I mean, a people have the right to dissolve the bands of government if it doesn't work for them. It's one of
we
our
used
founding,
to believe that.
It's one of our founding principles. Yeah,
I mean, till the Civil War, and then we very much decided we didn't like that.
And I've written about segregation, and I've written about, you know, the binds that tie us, and you can find some of that at Weird Libertarians or ChrisSpangle.com. You know, about this very subject, but. If Scotland wants to be independent and they vote a majority to be independent, then that's their right. It's their fate. I mean, that's, do I think that
even though they're binding the Scottish people by more government and those that don't want to be there are still bound by that?
It's the same argument that you could make for the founding of the revolution here in America. I mean, there were plenty of Tories, plenty of people who were loyal to the crown. Estimates are anywhere from 20% were loyal to the crown up to 60 to 70% were loyal to the crown. It depends on what newspaper at the time you're reading. You know, it wasn't there wasn't accurate
polling.
Was it
Fox or MSNBC?
Yeah, it wasn't accurate. We can't even do accurate polling in the internet age, let alone in 1775. But, you know, that's always the argument, and that's sort of the folly of government, is that there's this idea that a vote can speak for every individual. And, you know, we live in a country where certainly very little about our federal government reflects anything that I believe that the federal government ought to be, if the federal government even existed in the first place. And boy, that phrase right there, if I ever run for office, will be on a TV commercial, won't it?
Yep. Luckily, it'll be as a libertarian, and so you're good. You're in the clear.
Right.
It's consistent.
Yeah, no, I'd never be a scumbag Republican.
Didn't you used to like organize things for 9/11 and like the war in Iraq?
Terrorists? Yeah. Yeah, I used to organize things for 9/11. Thanks. I'm going to have the FBI at my door. And
you've already had the Secret Service, so I figure why not just add the next one?
I really do. Now that I'm not in LPIN leadership anymore, I need to go post that video of the Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving. It was a Support the Troops rally in 2003, and it was a pro-war rally with pro-war Republican congressmen and pro-war...
Whole lot of they hate our freedom crap is there.
Let me show you the enemy, and the enemy was me. Oh, I was such an idiot. I mean, being 21, why does... Listen, if you're under the age of 25 and you're listening to this, especially you males, because women have their crap together more than men. That's no doubt.
Well...
Stop it. So, it's true. You don't know anything. At all. Like, I think about when I was in college and the stuff that I said and did, I just don't know how every grown-up around me didn't just slap the piss out of me every 5 seconds and go, shut up, you. Like, I just was so... Everything changed. I didn't stop really growing until 25, and politically, I still am growing. You listen to this podcast, you listen to all, however, almost nearly 100 episodes, you hear my transgressions and my progressions. That was a little Jesse Jackson impression for you. You hear my change, and I don't think anybody is ever really done learning when it comes to politics. So,
and I think a lot of it, too, is that you can get pigeonholed trying to apply... One thing I hate for a lot of libertarians, especially when they do the public TV shows, like when they go on Stossel or they go on Bill Maher, he has Gillespie on, is... The principles are the framework with which you interpret something. Unfortunately, the world is so often a principled response it won't accept. The reality of this situation, and I think the Scotland thing is a perfect example. We're watching a group of individuals, maybe 51% want their independence.
Right.
And yet 49% don't. In reality, the 49%, it's not like they can just all of a sudden take theirs from the Scottish government.
Right.
This is allowed because of a piece of paper written down, a concordant, which is the closest thing in the United States to a concordant, by the way, and I forgot to say this, is like a non-binding resolution. So this is going to get challenged legally, even if they win.
Right.
There is no liberty option for these Scottish people that maybe just want to be left alone.
Sure.
They can't go anywhere in this world and be left alone.
The more... quote-unquote libertarian option is to stay with the socialist government of England.
Because he wants less of a state than your guy.
Right.
Even though he's not cloaking it in nationalism.
Right.
So it's one of those things where, every episode we may get blasted because what'd somebody call it when Joe took that poll? If you listen, it was like, oh, we are the statists.
Oh, that
or
was
we are statists, yeah. Except for when Amaya, the moderate libertarian's on.
Yeah, that person I know was making a joke.
But. Yeah, but I mean, that's how sometimes it feels because we don't always disagree. But the pure libertarian a lot of times is the very, very young libertarian. And I think I feel like for us, when we look at something, we've seen enough happen now, even though we're only, 29 and 30 or 31. We know that sometimes what looks great doesn't always end up that way.
There's always a string attached somewhere. And
like democracy was going to be great for Iraq.
I guess it doesn't even, yeah. I mean, how democracy, we need to bring freedom to that country. I mean, that nothing could have been further from the truth. We just created a vacuum. When in reality... It's the very idea that we're creating a vacuum to suck up all the terrorists into that location to torture, terrorize the people of that country and not us may have been the design all along.
That was the design, was to milk us. I mean, that's the Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood produced a pamphlet, and the first thing is drag us into a two-pronged war and bankrupt us and then watch us never be able to leave.
Right. I'm talking about our end.
Oh, yeah.
Go over there. Fight a war in that region, suck up every terrorist so they're fighting us there so they don't come and bomb us here. We destabilize their region so they're so busy fighting for territory in the Middle East that jihadists don't have the resources and the strategy to come and attack us here. And so what that means is that we callously, not we, but the government that we have elected, callously looks at human life in Iraq as less valuable than American life. That's the principle of, that is one of the foundational principles of nationalism, is that I as an American am worth more than the life of a Canadian.
That's probably true.
Right, that's true. Or that my life is worth more because I live in the freest, richest, goddamn best country in the world where Toby Keith can get drunk and sing on stage, by God, about America. My life is worth more than someone from Vietnam or Taiwan or Puerto Rico or, you know, and that's why people like Hugo Chavez rise to power. That's why people like the Muslim Brotherhood and the jihadis and ISIS rise to power, especially in South America. That's why you see the rise of the strongmen. That's because the IMF, the World Bank, the Americans, the American government and our financial system, they exploit the resources of these countries and manipulate their people into giving them their resources. There's a great book by John Perkins called The
Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah, and you can find a few things about him and by him on Netflix, some documentaries that are very insightful. And so we exploit the resources of these countries for our own gain. And then the guy who says, hey, they're nationalist. Why shouldn't Venezuelans be nationalist? Why are we going to let the first world bully our people when we have inherent greatness in us? And these are the traditions that define us, and we need to unite against the common enemy, the Americans. What American is going to respond to that if it were happening in America? We sit there and go, oh, well, Obama just blames America first.
Oh, I'd paint my car with the American flag and play nothing but Hank Williams and have a shotgun going out of the window at all times. You know?
You know, if Canada invaded Indianapolis, I'd be the first one with a gun to join the resistance movement.
You know how many beheading videos I'd be in?
You only have one head, Greg.
No, I would be conducting.
We should erase that for the podcast. That's unfortunate.
It's a joke about Canadians' lives being less than ours.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, right? You'd be recording.
I'd put them in a hot box with the hungry mittens.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's torture.
That is torture.
So,
but, I mean, is there something to look at that, though? Because it's like you talked about. The vacuum of power is what was created in Iraq. And so we're going to see, if we see Scotch independence, we're going to see, hopefully they have their act together enough and they have enough institutions, it can be a incremental, slow transition.
Right.
Assume they don't. Assume Britain decides to be a big bully and they say, you know what, screw you guys. You're not using the pound. We're going to impose a tax. No one, you're not going to have access to the global debt markets. You're going to have your oil. That's nice. But guess what? We're going to say no one can sell goods, or we're not going to buy goods from anyone that decides to buy oil from you guys, and you're isolated alone.
Right.
What do they do? The government falls.
Yeah.
The people don't support it any longer. What happens? They either have to go back to the British government, hat in hand, and say, please take us back, and they'll enact draconian concessions, or a strong man rises, an authoritarian, we need order in this time of chaos, that makes you proud. And
there's only one man for the job.
Who?
Toronto Mayor Rob Ford.
Well, has cancer.
Oh, really?
Diagnosed today with a rare form of cancer, and it's probably incurable.
Oh, well, that makes my joke totally inappropriate.
I was telling anyway.
I was going to say that if one man could rule Scotland with an iron fist, it would certainly be him, but hopefully the cancer's not in his fist, is it?
No, I don't know exactly where it is. It was just the Business Insider headline right before I was coming over here.
Oh,
I actually felt bad because, you know, I don't always feel bad for Rob Ford because I feel like he's really an American that's stuck in a Canadian body. You know, and if you had to live your life with such you know, dysfunction, then surely you'd do crack with the homeless. I mean, he was a man of the people.
If anyone that was ever actually from Chicago, it's Rob Ford.
Yes, but it is sad, but. I don't know. Is that something where I look at this trend and I look at when you look at even voluntarism from a foundational perspective, assume voluntarism is possible. Assume anarcho-capitalism, whatever brand of non-statism you subscribe to. who's going to stop anyone from ever rising and forming a band of individuals who decide to impose their will against the minority?
Sure.
What is the backstop? And so as a libertarian, I always struggle with, is minarchism the actual endpoint, or is it anarchism? And I fight it all the time. And the only reason why is I say, what's to stop? I mean, the human history is, it's not always government. It's because government's nothing different than a group of individuals who can finance followers going and dominating.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be the government. It can be whoever, because people have shown they don't always stand up to it.
Well, even in this society where we, in this government where we have, we're a socialist state, or
yeah.
Welfare
liberalism is what, yeah.
You know, welfare liberalism, you know, the wealthy 1%, and I'm not a Wall Street one of those people, but the wealthiest, most powerful people in our country still rule and tilt the scales in their favor. So that's, you know, you always hear one of the best arguments against any kind of anti-libertarian argument is, and how is that different than now? You just have to be able to back up facts. It's like, well,
none of those guys would be powerful if it weren't for the government.
Sure.
Because everybody would not be able to be a corporation. They'd have to be individuals.
Right. So it's, I don't know.
No, it's one of those, I see this theme, because I feel like we talk a lot about incrementalism, and we talk about we support small improvements of liberty. But in the case of Scotland, the improvement of liberty is a socialist state over maybe a small majority, if that, because realistically, if they win, it's 51%, and those are the people who have the most to lose, because they're being told that their pensions and all these things are going to be taken away from them. It's all these things the state gives them and requires.
Right.
So is that a good thing for liberty? Is that a bad thing for liberty? We're sitting here looking at an independence movement going, well, damn, how does it affect liberty in individuals' lives to choose to self-govern?
Right. All right, well, let's wrap that up and move on to Obama and ISIS. If do you have any final points on Scotland?
No, I just was, you know, and sorry to ramble.
No, you're fine.
I just thought that was, you know, I struggle with that, so I'd love to hear what listeners think.
How should they contact us? What's the best way to get a hold of us?
Send us gifts.
Well, yeah, I mean,
preferably gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Send me the gold. You can have the myrrh. We'll give Joe the frankincense because he likes to smell pretty for a Mickey.
That wasn't a racist joke. So
no,
I'm not
it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
I thought I was going to go there.
Frankincense is the incense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Myrrh is the ointment.
All right. You definitely need the lube. And Joe definitely needs the incense.
But it's holy. Right. So it might set my skin on
fire.
Oh,
I bet it's holy. All right, yes, Greg, you may pee. How did it go? Are you okay?
Everything I feel good.
All right.
I feel
See,
good.
The magic of editing, the magic of podcasting.
And we're back.
Had this been a radio show, you would have heard roughly 2 minutes of urinating and flipping around on the internet going, oh, a new Kindle.
Like.
Right. I wonder if my new iOS 8 update is, oh, damn. Jeremiah, I'll have to text you back later.
Speaking of, are you going to get the new iPhone 6?
I want to feel it in my hand before I choose. I will have to upgrade, obviously, but I'm not going to like stand in line to get the new iPhone. I don't have that kind of money. But the bigger size definitely needs to happen. But I saw a phone today. It was an Android phone. I mean, it was the size of an iPad mini.
Yeah,
it
was
ridiculous how big it was. I mean, it was huge, and it was about the size of my Amazon Kindle Paperwhite, which is kind of the smaller e-reader. It just was crazy big.
And do you think those things that you clip on belts are going to come back, except they'll be razor thin?
I mean, I've been wearing a fanny pack for 3 months trying to make it happen.
You're trendy.
And people are just like, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. So, speaking of stop trying to make things happen, it's not going to happen. Let's get to Barack Obama, because he seems to try and get things to happen, and then they never happen. Although, he might actually get a war.
Well, he was going to bring our troops home.
And then that didn't happen.
Then he decided to name troops strategic military advisors and send them back to Baghdad.
Well, that's a long tradition started by John Kennedy.
Yeah.
He's just following in the footsteps of the great John Kennedy.
I say just outsource it to Blackwater and make Dick Cheney even richer. Why even mess around?
Dick Cheney.
Old Dickie. He's salivating right now. He can't wait to go kill some terrorists.
So I'm going to go waterboard those sons of bitches. So Donald Rumsfeld is the head of the Department of Defense, right?
And well,
Paul
it would,
Wolfowitz designing the strategy. And
pretty much, except the difference is we have a Nobel Peace Prize winning president that is, in fact, declaring war on a quasi-state terrorist organization who really, in a lot of the places they rule, are preferred.
Okay.
They are. I mean, they just are because it's they create stability. They're like a dictator.
You know, the majority of people like them, unless you have a vagina, then they're not crazy about them.
The women and the Shias and the Christians and the Yazidis that were trapped up on a mountain.
Yazidis.
Not huge fans, but the Sunnis, you know, eh.
You know, the male Sunnis, big fans.
Big fans.
Big
fans. You know, it's always messy. It's never clean.
Listen, democracy is tough.
Yeah. Oh, clearly in Iraq.
Right. So when you're trying to install a new government, listen, it works if you're a Sunni male. I don't know. I just look at this and I don't understand. Far be it from me, the libertarian guy, to say, on one hand, I'm really glad that Barack Obama is totally incompetent. Like, he is really, really incompetent, especially when it comes to foreign affairs and these sorts of issues, because his heart's not in it. Like, George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz and those guys, they really wanted to go to war.
Let them keep their money, we'll cut taxes, and we'll do whatever the hell we want and talk about freedom.
Right. Barack Obama is a self-conflicted man who is getting the same reports that George Bush, and I always kind of refer back to the Glenn Beck story, and I have really no reason to doubt that George Bush would say this, even though the source is Glenn Beck. But he said, you know, he was meeting with Barack Obama, or he was meeting with George Bush in the Oval Office about on the same day that Barack Obama was coming out with, like, a foreign policy speech. And Beck asked him about it, and he just kind of smirked, and he said, well, you watch. The template is already set. There's nothing that man can do. And as soon as he gets in here and starts seeing the same security briefings I'm seeing, not much is going to change. You know, it's something along those lines.
Drone strikes increased.
Yeah, he just put the pedal to the metal on a lot of what Bush was doing. You know, so there at the end, I mean, obviously putting the pedal to the metal by invading two countries and many, many more, just not directly.
Although we were welcomed a little bit better than ISIS was when they took over northern Iraq and Syria.
Right. So, you know, there was a lot that, like, Obama seems to me, and I've said it so many times, and I'll say it again because it's been a while, Obama to me seems to be the type of guy who had these grand visions, who really thought he could change things, and if anybody could do it, he had the charisma in his own mind to make it happen because of his personality and his stardom. And then he gets the office, and he realizes there's really not much he can change. And there's really no reason to try. And gee, why don't people like me? And I'm not really actually a Muslim from Kenya. And, you know, like, he just gets bogged down by it. You know, he's just sort of the sad figure smoking in the corner at this point. I mean, he just really, the PR nightmare of this entire situation, you know, we don't have a plan. Couldn't telegraph weakness more than that as a war leader, as a war president. And then the General Dempsey going before the Joint Chiefs of Staff goes before the Senate and the House and says something to the effect of, well, I know the president says he doesn't want boots on the ground, but I'm sure that once he takes a look at things, he'll change his mind. You know, that's a huge PR cluster because
the president had to fly down there on his ground and say, lock it up.
Right.
You know, and he can't fire him because he fired McChrystal, and, like, every general's like, no,
he's fired as many top generals as Lincoln has at this point.
Oh, my God.
I mean, and all for insubordination. So it's another telegraphing, it's another signal from the military that they don't trust this guy. He doesn't know what he's doing. They get in his way. But then again, as a libertarian, the fact that this guy doesn't know how to really, he doesn't have a plan. He doesn't know what he's doing.
he can't really get us into a war because he doesn't know how to get in one necessarily. You know, he's conflicted about it.
Because even if he just came out and
bad.
Acted, no.
Not a bad thing, you know?
It depends.
Unless you're Greg Lenz and you just want to bomb freedom into every corner of the planet with where there's somebody who isn't white.
Well, that's a... No, that's pretty mild, actually. The thing is by announcing, you know, it's the biggest issue is the president. Yes, I would agree with you. This guy had grand designs for the very makeup of the welfare state in the United States. He fashioned himself as a new FDR.
Right.
The problem is the rise of the Tea Party, and for whatever reason, people decided he just wasn't populist enough. Mm-hmm. Like FDR. It didn't even matter. Like, he was a man of the people. Like, right. He almost packed the Supreme Court, and this country would have been immeasurably changed forever. Would not exist as it does today.
Right.
But Barack Obama, for whatever reason, came off as an elitist intellectual with grand designs, not a populist man of the people like a Huey Long.
Right. He's definitely more Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, exactly.
Without the racism, and it's a different media than it was then. Everything was very controlled. And very, you know, you had three channels of information coming at you if you were able to get that information.
And if you did it wrong, they took your transponder license and then you were a network without the ability to broadcast.
You know, and now everyone is able to get a sense. I mean, as somebody who works for, I work for a nationally syndicated radio show. It's an entertainment show. It's the Bob and Tom Show. Please look us up, like us, help me out, visit our page, get me... You know, get the podcast, all that stuff. But you're around people who are in the public eye. We have a lot of guests that come on. You know, I work with people who obviously are on the radio. People are exactly who you think they are. Like, if you have a sense about someone that they're a jerk, they're a jerk. If you think somebody's actually really a decent guy, they're really actually a decent guy. I mean, so in this day and age, we get a sense of what's going on, who people are, what they're really about. Where you didn't have that with Woodrow Wilson.
No.
I mean, you know, I just have never subscribed to the theory that Barack Obama is some sort of Machiavellian mastermind building a secret network of liberal cabalism when he really just looks like a guy who hates his job.
Yeah. And it's funny, Harry Reid, when Barack was first elected, or President Obama, sorry. When President Obama was first elected.
Elested?
Molested by, and that's not a joke. I wish you'd quit laughing.
Sorry.
Anyway, he met with him and he goes, "You're excellent. You're going to hate the Senate because the president does." He used to have the ability to speak, inspire. He was the great healer, but he also came at a point in history after George W. Bush, who was arguably the worst media president since probably his father. His dad was really bad too. But the president just looked so great, and he looked like a brand new breath of fresh air. But he was meant for the Senate. The guy's a wonk.
Yep.
He's a nerd. He is very into public policy. He didn't used to give a crap at all about foreign policy. And the reason he didn't is because he thought people are rational enough that we'll just figure out a way to align interests and everybody's going to...
Right.
We can coexist for just long enough we don't have nuclear war.
If I speak this into existence, everyone will realize how brilliant it is and just grab onto it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And he's idealistic. He is, you know, he just can't grasp the world exists in a way where people don't act rationally. And, you know, it was like the Bitter Clingers thing he made about Americans. Take that and put that on steroids, and you get a lot of the rest of the world that it's in unrest because they are tribal. They don't have access to the internet. They don't go on Wikipedia benders. They don't watch MSNBC and Bill Maher and whatever. They have one access to knowledge, what the individuals who allow it to exist tell them. And so you end up creating a fundamental territorial country that exists on paper but not in reality, and there is no going up. You can't walk up to one of their tribal leaders and say, "Listen, hey, isn't it kind of crazy we're all fighting?"
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
It's a lot. The only way to deal with them is like a Vladimir Putin does, an iron fist come down on them and hope, you know, either make them rich so that you control them or scare the hell out of them, or you tell them and create a lie that Allah is mad at them for being so angry.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's it's The problem is Barack Obama can't reason with the person that is living in Syria right now.
Exactly.
You just can't. Much like George Bush couldn't personally liberate the people of Iraq and make their life better. And that is the folly of interventionism and intervention in foreign affairs. It's foolish. It's folly, you know, and doesn't make it, the answer isn't always just do nothing, but sometimes that is the answer.
Sometimes that's the best answer.
Right.
Like, Saddam Hussein looks fantastic to even the most the biggest political dissident in northern Iraq right now,
right,
or in Baghdad, because all of a sudden you're the target because ISIS is rising and having ISIL, which the president insists on referring to it as, mm-hmm, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, and Glenn Beck thought was a cataclysmic apocalyptic sign. Which, yes, because that included Israel.
Right.
Right? Yes, right. And
why does he choose ISIL?
ISIL means, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, and the Levantine states are the, you know, Syria, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Morocco, Jordan, you know, the southern Mediterranean, northern tip of Africa, and Israel, you know, Israel quasi-Palestine, all the way over into Spain. And it really doesn't matter what you call them. The very nature that they're a caliphate means they have to be expansionist. And so that's what made it so funny about the president saying, we're going to arm the moderate rebels.
And then the Senate voting on that today.
And passing it in the House, and the Senate votes tomorrow and finalizes it. But you know how much it's going to cost to train each moderate rebel?
How much?
$1 million is what's been budgeted per moderate rebel.
Oh, my God.
$1 million per individual. And in reality, the last moderate rebels we trained are the ones who are getting ready to go fight and train right, their moderate rebels. Can you imagine how much more moderate they must be than the guys that were more moderate than them the last time that we're fighting all of a sudden?
The last time an American politician was in Syria taking pictures with moderate...
That got exposed as a hoax.
Okay, well...
Well, maybe. Who knows? It's media.
So John McCain wasn't meeting with members of ISIS.
Rand Paul said it in an interview today, and he got blistered because, you know, the media watchdogs can't wait to, destroy Rand Paul because he likes, he supports pot and freedom exportation.
Right.
But, so it turns out that may have been a hoax, but I mean, we won't really know.
Nah.
But who he did meet with was the Al-Nusra Front,
mm-hmm,
who is the Al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria.
Right.
Who, guess what they want, assuming they're successful in defeating ISIS and Assad?
The Levant?
They want a caliphate.
Right.
They subscribe to pan-Islamism, so...
Right.
They were... And the reason we didn't back them last time is they were less moderate than the moderates we did back.
Right.
So it's a Hail Mary.
Crazy.
It's a Hail Mary, and I don't feel sorry for the president because he is an academic elite that subscribes to the idea he can perfect the world.
Right.
You can't.
Mm-mm.
You put out fires when they pop up, and you do your best to make sure that your citizens are safe, secure, and as free as they can be.
Right. Well, any other thoughts on ISIS and ISIL? We're running short on time here.
We're going to see ground troops.
Absolutely. Dempsey, the chief of staff, basically told us that. I mean, that's the thing about conspiracy theorists, and I know we're wrapping up 9/11 here. You don't need conspiracies for all this stuff. It's like right in front of your eyes if you actually read the newspaper and you see what's happening. I mean, the Joint Chiefs of Staff is basically telegraphing to us, there's going to need to be ground troops to take care of this. And everybody in Washington and anybody who's paid attention to the news knows it. Any kind of, little old dumb me here in Indianapolis, Indiana, who basically just reads the newspaper and has a podcast and opinions.
And a monarch.
I am a monarch. I am king of my castle. My subjects, Mittens and Cornelius, are well fed. I am the worst monarch ever because I serve them because they're cats. It should be the other way around. But you know at some point we're going to have to go in. We're going to have to produce ground troops if we want to take care of them, because airstrikes are fine if you're fighting, like, Russia and you can see their tanks. When you're fighting something like ISIS and a counterinsurgency, you know, or an insurgency, either way, they're highly mobile. The intelligence is bad. They're going to move into different places. They're going to hide in places with human shields.
That's the danger.
And then all of a sudden, it's the PR nightmare for the Obama administration, where 400 kids have been killed, along with one ISIS leader. You know, and oh, by the way, they were wearing American flak jackets and driving American Humvees. You know, what are we doing over there? And really, if you have an air war taking place, you've got to have on the ground intelligence to find out where things are moving. You have to have coordinates, and you know, it's a fantasy to say that we're going to be effective with just drones and you know, just missile strikes. It's not going to happen. There's going to be ground troops at some point if they're going to seriously fight ISIS. And how much do they ratchet up the American people to scare us into?
Did you see the major news story today?
Uh-uh.
A guy got convicted today of being, I mean, the trial's been going on, and he ended up working with two FBI plants to recruit people and send them over to Syria. And mm-hmm. so our first ISIS or ISIL fighter has been convicted in the United States as of today in New York.
Really?
Yep. And then the other big thing is that down on the Texas border, that's where a lot of the propaganda is happening. Listen, you're not going to scare a bunch of Texans. Like, I don't care what weapons you have. I went to, you know, I spent a couple years there in college. They're not going to be ruled because they'll just get out their Chevy Silverados and they'll make makeshift bombs. They don't like you, and I dare you to come to that border. You'd be better off going to New Mexico, Arizona, or California, where you can just fall over it.
It's all American military bases. You can fight them. They'll put up a good fight. Don't go to Texas.
Yeah, they think the U.S. government is not interventionist enough. Go to their border. Oh, my gosh. It makes the Gestapo look like U.N. fighters.
Right.
But, you know, it's funny. We know where this is going.
Right.
We know that we can't do anything because the president goes in his speech. That's what the tweets that Joe. I had no idea Joe Ruiz going to turn that into a blog post. And luckily, I was coherent enough at that time of night that it kind of made sense. So I apologize if it seemed a little rambling. But the point is, the president said we're going to drive them out. Where are they going to go?
Right.
They live there. They are members of the community. They're right now, they're on the rising tide. They're on the team that's winning, and so some of them made bets. ISIS is no different than the al-Nusra Front that we are going to arm and train now in Saudi Arabia. They're no different than... The only ones that we can even back are the Free Syrian Army, who are defectors from this Assad's army that want a democracy. A secular democracy in Syria. For whatever reason, we've never decided to support them. We'll support anyone else. Any of the Islamic, the less crazy Islamic, you know, jihadist fighters. But the Free Syrian Army is now who we're finally starting to reach out to. Because last week, the big development on the night the president made his speech, that night, the second largest group of moderate rebels, 48 of their members, including their top guy and 2, 3, and 4 in command, were taken out in an underground bunker in a suicide bombing by an ISIS plant.
Jeez.
So it's not winnable. He can't support Assad because there's so many geopolitics at work.
Despite John Kerry recently dining with Assad.
Yeah. That's the first time in his entire adult life he's been useful is because the guy's had dinner with Assad a couple times over the last 10 years, and he can talk to him. And Assad's going to play us like a drum.
Right.
He is going to say, listen, what helps me stay in power? He's a dictator. So if he needs to be Team America, he'll be Team America and have Charlie Rose back over and wine and dine him.
Right. Also, congratulations to Mrs. Assad on the birth of their new child.
Yeah.
She's pregnant again.
Yeah. Which Mrs. Assad?
Yeah, good point.
But it's an unwinnable, and so the president's strategy, which he's going around trying to sell people on, is we're going to fund the moderate rebels in Syria who were too crazy for us to fund and train last time, which is why ISIS formed, ISIL, the rebels. So we're going to go to the second worst, pray that they can beat the guys we trained, funded, and have now taken over control of the arms of the Iraqi army.
Right.
if that works and somehow they're able to win and the Iraqi government can really build a a coalition government in Baghdad and take back control, hope and pray they don't just set their sights in Syria, topple Assad, and watch the Russians march in and start raining down on them, and they don't care about committing ground troops.
Right.
They will make these propaganda ISIL videos look like bad horror movies from the 60s.
Right.
Russians are not subject to the same human rights things that we are.
I mean, I had a conversation with a couple Russian kids back in college, and they're like, we don't know if it's true or not, but our special forces and many of our regular military men, they're forced to train in pools of blood. Okay, you're just talking about the ruthlessness of the Russian military, and you can only imagine how much that's changed under Putin over the last, 10 years since I had that conversation with him. He's like, he was just talking about how, as we were comparing militaries and measuring the size of our navies against each other, and he's like, we would destroy you in war because we are fucking crazy. We are drunk all the time. And he was drunk on vodka as the time I was speaking to him. But, they don't care. Do you think Putin cares about human life in any way, shape, or form?
He cares about maintaining power and making Russians proud.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that bothers me about the president is it's not that his worldview isn't an idealistic good thing. Like when he came in and said, we're going to approach the Arab world and we will extend our hand if you'll just unclench your fist. He made a big bet and he took it's not an amateur move, but it's
right.
You've given up any hope of ever scaring anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden the Arab Spring props up. And I think a lot of us, and even myself and Timothy included, looked at the Arab Spring and said, that's a good thing.
Right.
In hindsight, terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
For freedom and for liberty of individuals. That's what scares me about the Scottish movement, is that they get independence and all of a sudden they're a whole lot less free than they were under David Cameron.
Sure.
But I think it'll be interesting to see. The president he just made a strategic mistake. He's dealing with it. He's throwing a Hail Mary praying that they'll be able to defeat ISIL. The Iraqi government that's shown no signs of being able to form a coalition and moderate democracy, inclusive democracy, will work, and that those rebels won't all of a sudden turn around and turn on Assad and take over Syria and turn it into a Islamic state, because they don't make any bones about it. The leader of the al-Nusra Front, who's the strongest moderate rebels, wants a caliphate too. He just doesn't want Baghdadi as the caliph.
Sure. He wants to be the head of the caliphate, right?
Yeah. And now we've got a prisoner in Saudi Arabia saying that they want to be the caliph too.
Right.
And what's really funny is everybody's all over ISIL for beheadings. They've had 19 in August.
Right.
Saudi Arabia had 46.
Of their own
ally.
People. Yeah.
Ally.
Right. Oh, all right. Well, this has been an uplifting podcast as usual. This is where you come for your doom porn here on Weird Libertarians. The Scottish are about to ruin the world, and then ISIS will take over.
All of a sudden, the Scots will go on an epic bender, be hungover, and wake up, and why are all our children speaking Arabic?
All right. Final thoughts for the podcast, Craig.
No. My prediction is that the referendum loses by about 7 points. And then watch what's going on. The airstrikes, which actually were effective today, but what's going to happen is, in my opinion, they're abandoning their strategic locations where they've set up government, ISIL is. So they're going to turn into like a Hamas or Hezbollah where they'll hide amongst the people.
Hmm. All right. Well, I have no thoughts, as we all have learned through this podcast. But thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Thank you to LRN.FM for carrying us and for all of you listening for your gracious support. We apologize that this episode was so poor. Next time, we promise to do
better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.